Open loops. Open loops. Open loops. Open loops. Open loops. You must listen to the open loops, a theme park for absurd beliefs and systems of integration between the mind and the creative spirit. Open loops.
Today on Open Loops, we have Matteo Morelli, a professional hypnotist, entrepreneur, a man that is very close to my heart of interest. I mean, his expertise, listen to this, built through the study of close-up magic, psychology, professional development, sales, entrepreneurship, public speaking, and many other fields. Yes, all those things I've hammered over and over on the show and tried to put together. And Matteo has definitely done it in a very unique way. I mean, he had this YouTube channel that was wildly popular under the Mind Titans brand, then wrote the book Covert Hypnosis in Real Life. And he is now shifting out of teaching people really, really well broken down hypnotic techniques that are practical, moving that into the world of entrepreneurship with Mind Moneta, which we're going to get into, but I definitely need to talk to him about this hypnosis stuff. Matteo, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure. And as you said, we have a lot of commonalities, so it's pretty rare to find somebody with so many things we can discuss in that kind of world, especially magic and all these things. Not that common. So yeah,
they're going to be here. Likewise, I know everybody I talk to that is a hypnotist. It is rare. I mean, I think James Tripp of Hypnosis Without Trance also had a magic interest first, and Darren Brown. That's a commonality that I share with him. But to the jump from magic to deep into covert hypnosis. I know we've both talked about Rex Sykes before too. He's got the magic thing, but it is rare. Everybody, like I was saying, everybody is usually, well, I had an issue and I stopped smoking, or I saw stage hypnosis performer and I was stuttering, and I said, oh, if they can do that on stage, then I can do this. But I like somebody like yourself that sees the magic in it, or at least comes from a magic background. I mean, I'm curious, how did hypnosis even enter your life after studying close-up magic? How did this stuff even make its way into your awareness?
Yeah, indeed, it was initially linked with magic for me, the hypnosis and the NLP stuff, because I started magic at 14 years old, and there was a great club in my town, so hometown, so I could meet tons of magicians, which at 14 years old is mind-blowing when you're just starting this stuff. And fast forward at 19, 20 years old, I entered a college and university studying psychology. So I had some interest about how the mind works already built up. And I had already read books about it within magic. And from the magicians I knew, some of them were hypnotists, not professional in terms of therapy, healing, anything like this, but they were professional street hypnotists or stage hypnotists. And a few of them had built those events every twice a month, I think. They had built some event where they were gathering people around the topic of hypnosis and demonstrating what it could do. For them, it was completely free, and for them, it was more a way of training themselves in a non-threatening environment. Because when you are getting paid for the show, you need to provide results. Otherwise, the guy who hired you won't be happy. Whereas there, it
Yes.
was free, so they didn't need to provide results every night. But they still did, but they didn't need to. And that was my first exposure to hypnosis. And I was really, not, I wouldn't say fascinated at first, but really intrigued, really intrigued. And it was even a few years before that another magician I knew had mentioned the term NLP that I had never heard before. He said it was like he was like mentalism, but under steroids. He said, when you know NLP, it's like the whole stuff we do about figuring out what people think, it is this, but on steroids, when you know NLP. That was my first exposure to it. So when I entered college, I started to dive into NLP books. The very first one was Introducing NLP by Joseph Seymour, I think. And from there, reading those books and being exposed to hypnosis on a stay in a show like this, especially reading the books, it triggered something inside me. I knew there was something extremely that somewhere my life was going toward that, one way or another. I couldn't explain how yet. Now I can, because now my whole brain is around this. So now,
Yes.
8 years later, it is easy to explain. But 8 years ago, I didn't have a clue. I would do that for a living. Not a clue. But I had this really instinct, this huge instinct of, this is incredible. I need to dive deep into this topic. So from there, I read well, probably all the books of NLP on the market at that moment. And that's pretty much
Yeah.
how the whole stuff started for me.
Yeah, that's interesting. That's interesting. Two directions I could go with this. Let me ask you
Yep.
one first, about the magical aspect of it. And this gets a little more philosophical, Mateo, but I'm curious. I mean, do you think that instinctual response to it? Because again, I'm really trying to understand myself here too. It was the same thing. I mean, when I picked up even reading such a dry book, it was such a dry book. But even as I was reading it. The Structure of Magic, which is the book on the meta model, one of the first books Bandler and Grinder, the co-founders of NLP, put out. Even as I was reading that, I was like, whoa, I'm more interested in this than because I was an actor. I mean, I went to school for acting and then I was out in the world doing this. And even Offset, like I would not. I remember I was in a Shakespeare show, Othello, and on my Kindle with a copy of bootleg copy. Sorry. You guys didn't put your copies of your books out when Kindle came out in time, Bandler and Grinder. Now they're charging for their books, or somebody is. But yes, I was reading a bootleg of Structure of Magic, and I was just sitting there going, gosh, this is so much more interesting than anything. I don't care about plays. I don't care about characters. I'm not even sure I want to be an actor. But I do know I'm drawn to this for some reason because there's something about understanding the unconscious and the way it relates to language and communication that is fascinating to me. I mean, can you put yourself in the place where you were when you were experiencing that magic. What was it that really resonated for you in that NLP work?
It was definitely what you mentioned, figuring out how the unconscious mind works, more generally speaking, how the mind works. But whenever we get into the mind, we get into the unconscious mind. Theoretically speaking, we need to figure that out if we really want to understand how the mind works. It was really about this, figuring out how other people work. I think from a very young age, I had some interest in that. Like when I was 14 or 13, I was always watching all those, Criminal Minds TV
Yes.
shows. I was watching, I was even taking notes back then. At 14 years old, Oh, the human mind works that way. Oh, when a guy says this, he means that. I was right. I was taking some notes like this when I was in middle school already. So it was always really an interest of mine, and I was always trying to figure out. I was the kind of kid who didn't fit in. That could be understood by all my interest in life. I was
I relate to
typically the
that.
kid. Yeah,
Yeah.
I know. I was typically the kid who doesn't fit in. So I was trying to figure out people from the outside because I was never really accepted socially, or I didn't know how to make myself accepted socially back then. So I was always trying to look at people and figure out what they think, why do they say this, and if I want to get something, how can I say it? Was really coming from a very young age for me. So when I dived into NLP, indeed, I had read psychology books before that I thought were interesting, but I had never found anything like this that was so
Yes.
practical for, okay, the mind works this way. Therefore, if you want to influence it, you do this and this and that, like a model, which is the basic of NLP, make models out of what works instead of just theorizing about it. So I had never found anything so precise, specific, and practical, underlining practical, because in psychology you have tons of models that could be fascinating to read about, but you're left with nothing really you can apply in real life. It's just to make it's almost philosophy to me. It's like it makes
Yes.
you think and could be good sometimes, but when you want to apply it in real life, either for yourself and healing your own problems, or helping others, or persuading people, not
Right.
much to. Whereas
Well, this is.
NLP really,
Oh, no, sorry, I was going to say, I mean, you're speaking to me about I know that my family, when they hear of my interest in psychology and hypnosis and NLP, they're always going, "Well, Greg, maybe you need to go back to work or school for social work. Maybe you should get a degree in psychology if you really want to be doing this mind stuff." And one of the things is, I'm going, I get on one level having that, licensed clinical social worker thing by your name or PhD in psychology makes it more legitimate. People, that gives you the social proof, people are going to more likely sign up. But when you start getting into hypnosis and NLP and seeing that you don't really have to go to a place where you need a degree to get rapid life-transforming things for people, and it's more of what people want. There's a market demand for results, not for sitting with a therapist for years and years and years. Like, people aren't, when you sign up for a therapist, you're not really. It's a weird relationship therapists have with people in a way, because yes, you should talk to somebody professionally, but I think it's more for it's an immediate need to just have someone, but you're not, most people aren't looking at the long-term vision of what they're actually getting when they get a therapist. I certainly, as somebody that's been seeing mental health people for I've seen on and off for years, I know that I'm going, wait, is there a period when this is supposed to end? I don't know. So, but then you see a hypnotist and it does end really quickly. So I don't know. I mean, you definitely have worked with tons of people. I know people that have pivoted their entire careers from being a hypnotist after being in a corporate world that had nothing to do with psychology. What are your thoughts on that? I mean, your thoughts on being, how qualified do you have to be to start changing people's lives and even getting paid for it?
That's a great question because when I was studying psychology in college, especially in my, I come from France, and France is highly conservative anyway, no matter what the topic is. So whenever something new pops up, it's always bad anyway.
Yes.
Contrary to the US, where it's like we want to build new stuff, new brands that will make money. So people may have trouble with the financial aspect, but the US is really about novelty. France is all about no, we know what worked in the past, so we keep that the way it is. University in France is the same, psychology even worse. Therefore, when I was mentioning NLP into those lessons, oh my God, the face of the teacher was like I was talking about the devil. It's exactly
Right.
like it's exactly when I was mentioning NLP in college, it was exactly as if I was entering a church with a bunch of no nouns, nuns. How do you
Yeah,
say that?
that's the word,
None.
yeah.
And I was saying, who wants to have an orgy with the devil? Like it was the same thing. Their
Right,
face
right.
was the same thing. It was like, oh, it's evil to use NLP. How dare you talking about this here? I was like, what the hell? This is more useful than all the shit you got, you bunch of idiots have talked about for 3 months at this point.
Right.
So yeah. So in my opinion, to make that short, I understand the concern of all those teachers about people claiming they can help without any work on themselves prior, etc. So having a degree would be is a way, in their opinion, to measure that the person has had a legitimate exposure to the field or whatever before, which I understand the positive intention behind measuring who can do coaching and who can't, because indeed there are also big scammers in the world of coaching for sure. But my big problem with their whole ideology about where you need a master's degree or a PhD before you can do this or that is I was for 4 years in psychology. I still know people who went up to the master's degree. None of them can do, well, and I'm really bragging here, but none of them can do 1/10 of what I can do, whereas I never finished the studies because I started from using the stuff in real life instead of thinking about it and reading about it only. All those people, they spend 4 years sitting on a chair, listening to some teacher like this, taking notes. Then they got the exams. Then on the last year, on the fifth year, they had some exposure with some internship, which for a lot of them was not even relevant because they didn't do anything during the internship. And then, good, they have their degree, they can practice. I'm like, what the hell? Like, how is this is supposed to be more professional than people who have actually experimented on themselves, therapy techniques through an Ericksonian course or an NLP practitioner course, and who then practice with friends in a non-dangerous environment to see on each other what works, and then did it on the clients. To me, this is a way more practical approach than just studying theoretically for four or five years and then claiming you can help everybody else. I think this is working upside down. So I'm not saying every coach or NLP practitioner is legit, because definitely I have seen a bunch of scammers too, who think they can help others without even having worked on themselves first. I understand. But this whole dogma of you need a PhD or you need a master's degree before you can do therapy on others, this is complete nonsense to me. It's only about, there is no real regulation. It's really, like you said, results. It's based on results. When you try to help people, do you get results or not? If you don't, then eventually join a psychology degree if you feel like it is something that could help you. But if whenever you start helping people, you want to help people, you already help others have breakthroughs, insights about their lives, you already have it. Then you already have it. It's already inside you anyway. So then join maybe an NLP practitioner courses to fortify your skills and understand more deeply how it works, but you already have it. The foundation is when you try to help others, does it work or not? And by work, I don't mean that they change their lives, but at least do they get something out of the interaction with you? If yes, you're good to go. If no, okay, maybe do some more work and more studies or whatever is needed.
No, that's a great answer. I'm curious. Well, I actually am very curious about your early days studies. I love asking people about the stuff before they formalized. 14, 15, or even as a kid, I mean, do you remember ever having incidents where you were consciously trying to use like a persuasion technique or something to get kids around you to change? Do you have any memories of that?
Very good question. 14, 15, I don't think so. Also because it was, well, it was the beginning of magic to me, of close magic to me at this age. So I was more focused on doing magic tricks and trying to impress people. It was way more important for me at this point. I was not really thinking about the therapeutic aspect. I was not there yet at all. Yeah. But I already had this intuitive way of making people feel understood. I would say it was something very, very intuitive for me, not even knowing what I was doing. But I was also typically that guy who all the girls find he's a great friend because he can listen, but they never have sex with him.
That was definitely
only came way later for me, the whole aspect of seduction and this stuff and dating. But therefore, I had intuitively this aspect, you know, of being able to make people feel understood and making people open up. That was something I always had. I felt for a very long time, at least, maybe not always, but from very long ago. But it was not my intention at 14, 15 was not at all about making people change or anything like this. It only became important when I started wanting to change myself. So when I entered college, I was 19, 20. At this point, I wanted to change myself because I read those books and I was like, whoa, there are so many things I thought were true about myself, limitations that I thought were true that actually are not. Now that I read those books, Tony Robbins and stuff, I realized that all the limitations I thought were set in stone about myself are not true. Therefore, I want to change that. And I started this whole process everybody is doing in personal development. Some people do it more for money. Some people more for dating. Some people more for just self-esteem. But in the end, everybody, you know, in that space is working on themselves. At this point, I was working on myself too. And that's where obviously I was starting to mention all of that to other people. And psychology for this was the perfect environment for me because studying psychology, everybody's interested about how the mind works. So for me, those 4 years were really some of the best years of my life by far, because I was studying something I was so passionate about and I could talk about it every day and people would listen and be interested, not the teachers.
Right. Were you starting a secret underground mutiny? I mean, were people going, wait a minute, these teachers are, what's Mateo talking about? Wait a second.
I didn't even need to start anything secret or whatever, because all the people I was interacting with, they were interested anyway. When I was saying, oh, I learned that about hypnosis and about the unconscious mind, and some people I was interacting with were like, oh, really? Super interesting. But then don't you think that this and this and that? So we had a discussion about it. It was fascinating for me. And therefore, there were those hypnosis events with my magician friends, but I was bringing people from psychology to the hypnosis events. It was even better. That way they could experience for real. Oh, yeah, really. Those years were the best of my life, really. Was really, and there was not the money pressure yet in my life. So it's like all the good sides of life with all the bad sides of life at this moment from 19 years old to 23 years old for me was really the best of my life because of that, you know, just immersed into passions of mind and not really any troubles or nothing too big at least. Yeah, really great.
That's so good. I wish. I think that is part of the bigger picture of what I'm intrigued by in life. This notion of dedicating yourself to explorations of the mind. It feels that in the Western world, at least, you certainly have to. You got to put a price around that to survive, right? It's like you're not just doing we do this mastermind session where we explore consciousness, and it's on my Patreon for $47.95 a month, and you know, so yes, you do have to kind of look at what's working with the constructs that allow you to prosper, but in a world where money wasn't the top drive, and I think maybe we're moving towards this. A lot of spiritual people think this anyways. I just hope there is more of a widely accepted market beyond people that are just into NLP and hypnosis to go on really conscious and unconscious journeys and not have it be a drug thing. Just weekly, in the same way people go to gym, people go to yoga, just even beyond meditation circles, just hypnosis circle, trance circles. Like, this should be a popularized thing. I believe in it. And it seems that you were starting to cultivate something like that, where it's like you were, theoretical conversations about the mind. I mean, why we have so little time in this world and our minds are so interesting. I can't understand why, if you're interested in it, you wouldn't dedicate every living second to unpacking this thing. I don't know. But then again, you somehow, you are doing this with your money stuff now, and we'll get there later. It's still the mind is still a key component. It's still in the brand. But I want to know about how you became a mind titan. Tell me this. Well, you said you were reading these books and they spoke to you. What happened first? Did you immediately start applying stuff on yourself? Did you start testing things with others? Do you remember what were your developmental years of really becoming a master of NLP and hypnosis like?
Was definitely much more for me on myself way before trying to do anything on others. I had even no zero idea I would become a coach or a therapist or anything like anything related to helping others. It was really just about, wow, I have limitations that I can remove. Let's remove them. And having been so isolated socially for during my childhood, you know, I was wearing all my suitcase of bad shit that had happened, like many people. So there was tons of stuff to untie for me to just be natural in front of people, because I was not really natural socially. I was weird very, very often. Not with everybody, but I was kind of weird. And it was difficult for me to just become no, let's say normal, to
Yeah.
not, yeah. So it was much more for myself. And I think one of the initial triggers also was reading the book The Game, which might be controversial for many people, about seduction community, etc. For me, this book really resonated too, not only about, oh, you can pick up girls stuff, which had never happened to me before. I was so weird socially and so disconnected that I never had a girlfriend before 20 years old. I never even kissed a girl before 20 years old, you know. So when I read that book about one guy who was stuck and at 30 years old he got all the women he wanted, I was like, wow, so it is possible. It was not even a narcissist thing of, why now I have secret powers to manipulate. It was not even this.
Right.
It was just about, well, it is possible, really. So I thought it is even possible for someone like me who is so disconnected from other people, because I was really with the weird guy and the fat guy when I was really fat when I was a kid. So I was completely ostracized from many groups of people when I was a kid. So reading a book like The Game of someone who was kind of like me under several aspects and changing, I was like, it is possible to change on that level? Really? I had never thought about that. So
Right.
the idea came in big part from that book, and then more importantly, Tony Robbins. When I read Tony Robbins stuff, I was like, whoa, this is the practical way of changing yourself, becoming more confident, being able to be energetic with people without being weird, and always being present in communication to make sure people respond to you, all that stuff. So it was more a matter of changing myself and realizing that I could be social, be confident, and have a girlfriend easily without needing to be somebody else. I could just be like, okay, the cheesy word, be a better version of yourself, the best version of
Right,
yourself, whatever.
right.
But it still resonated with me, and that phrase really resonates with young 20 years old boys. You know, it really resonates because nobody really knows who he is at that age. We're still trying to figure out who do I want to be as a man or as a woman. I think it's the same thing. But yeah, it was really resonating with me, that idea. So it was more a journey to manhood, I would say, for me, that got me into this whole personal change stuff initially. So for probably the first 2 years, I think it was only about work on myself, I think. Work on my voice, work on erasing limiting beliefs about being social with people and about approaching people, not just girls, you know, even just making friends. You know, it was
Yeah.
always weird for me to approach people and make friends. And I was learning that way of being social right away without being scared of what are they going to think about me? Do they like me or not? Erasing all of that from my head and just becoming natural when I was interacting with people. So the first 2 years were much more about, you know, work on myself. And then from the third year, that is where I got more interested on, okay, me, I got this skill. Now what about others? How can I replicate, how not replicate, but I want to study the whole persuasion stuff. One thing I had really figured out through all my readings of either magic or tons of other stuff I was reading was that persuasion is really an essential skill in life if you want to have a career, if you want to make money and have a career. That's really I had no idea at this point what I would do for a living, but I had figured that out, that if you don't have anything, if you don't know anything about persuasion, you're pretty much the retard in the world of making money. It's really a basic foundation. Yeah, in my opinion, it was a basic foundation to be able to influence others verbally without force or violence, to have a career and be able to get what you want in life. So from the third year in college, I dived way more into the persuasion aspect of NLP that I had obviously skimmed through while reading about it, but I had always put that away, saying, well, right now I just want to become more confident and work on myself. And at that point, I had become pretty wildly confident already, and by challenging myself a lot. And therefore, I thought, okay, now let's get into the more persuasion thing. And that's where I joined an Ericksonian hypnosis course for 2 weeks, which was not even to become a therapist, but just I wanted to figure out more specifically, okay, there are all those language pattern stuff. How do we compact this into a natural way of speaking? And actually, I had already been studying that for months. So when I arrived in the course, I already knew most of what was
It was probably
based, but
unconscious to a certain level too. I mean, if you're reading all those books all this time, I'm sure there were things that you didn't even, oh yeah, I knew, I kind of speak. I mean, I know there have probably been times in that I've been catching myself being going, oh my gosh, wait, I think I just spoke. I'm not even sure sometimes how much I'm speaking covert hypnosis, but I know I've done it. No, but that's very interesting. So you're doing this course, and you discover that you knew more than you already thought you did. And where do you go from there?
To be mentioned during the course, what was extremely valuable, despite the fact that I already knew a lot, it was still very valuable because the teacher I had was extremely good. One of the few ones I think are really valuable because they are using that stuff in real life. Whenever he was talking to somebody from the group, even at lunch when we were having lunch, in some restaurant around, he was always using NLP with all the insecurities people were throwing at him about, oh, but will I be able to do this? I'm not sure about, can I do this? He was constantly pacing and leading, reframing, and it was natural from him. But me, who had been studying that stuff for months and years before, I knew what he was doing. But seeing it in real life from a real master in front of me, that was a big breakthrough of, oh, this is how it is used in a real conversation. I had ideas about it, but seeing it in real, knowing what he does, and being able to witness that, it was really, really valuable. So it was not so much the techniques that I already mostly knew, but it was being exposed to somebody who used that stuff in his real life, not just in the therapy office. And once he gets out of the therapy office, he doesn't know anymore how to use NLP, which is unfortunately a lot of people, once they get out of the situation of coaching, they don't know anymore how to use it for themselves. He knew he was using it that way. So it was really relevant for me to be in that course. I got a ton of value from it because of that teacher. Otherwise, I don't think I would have gotten so much. Some other introduction courses I had attended, the guys were just really scammers, in my opinion. They barely knew anything, and they were charging 5K for not really anything. So yeah, it
A
was
lot of
really
that out there,
valuable.
yes.
Yes, it was really valuable to find the right one. And from there, I kept on trying to use it. I had met a friend at this point, a guy on a face. It was not even a Facebook group. It was some forum about personal development, around social skills, all that stuff in my hometown. There was a forum about that, and one guy on that forum was really into the same stuff: NLP, the mind, subconscious influence, covert hypnosis. He was deep into this. So him and I were really trained together. We spent probably like 5 months, 5 months in 5 months in intensely trying things on each other, intensely, like sometimes 3 or 4 times a week. We were
Wow.
spending an afternoon together, Yeah, I was still a student, so I was still a student, and I was not even going to the exams anymore at this point. So I had all the free time I needed.
Yeah. What were you doing? Were you doing just deep trance work? Were you doing like deep trance identification, or were you trying to
All of
install things unconsciously? I mean, do you remember?
it.
I want to know about some of these weird experiments. What's the most interesting thing you unpacked working that closely with someone that was also interested in this topic?
I don't know if there was one specific thing. What I can say is that we started with the Rex Sykes manual, which was a gold mine for me, because the Rex
Yeah.
Sykes manual was really breaking down all the exercises about language and oh, this one in the Insider's Guide to Submodalities by Bandler. Those were the two we started with, and then another one that I forgot, but manuals, you know. No, we wanted manuals. Not theoretical stuff, but manuals we could practice, we could use all the
So you were
exercises.
just going one by one through each of the
Yeah,
exercises with each other to. That's
exactly. Just one by
interesting.
one.
Do you
One
recommend
by
that? I
one.
mean, what do you think other people and I know that you have, I mean, there's you've put together all your courses in this well, you can buy your courses individually. You've put a package together where people can get a bunch of your stuff for a regular monthly subscription, which has a lot more than the monthly Patreon idea I was talking about. That was just some fridge thing. This is like actual courses that you're charging hundreds and sometimes thousands for at a very, very reasonable rate. But I am curious in terms of your experience with learning. I almost want to model you for the purpose of this in this conversation. Do you think that doing that is something you would recommend in the process of learning NLP? I mean, what did you take away from that experience going through those manuals and doing it?
I would say this is the absolute foundation to mastering NLP. It is to
Wow.
have a friend with yours and practicing on each other. This is really, to me, the foundation. If you don't have this, you're going to have to rely on professional interactions, which in the beginning are very scary, because when somebody's paying you right away to help him or her, that's a lot of pressure. Whereas when you can practice with somebody else like this, and also I also had all the guys, you know, from the hypnosis events that I could try things with inductions, the whole being confident about the rapid induction, like give me your hand, slip. All of that, when you have been practicing with friends for months and years, you're not even scared anymore at this point, because you have already done it so many times.
Yeah.
So the big takeaway of having a friend to work with was that, you know, the big thing in NLP and hypnosis courses is the perceptual position training. So the fact that you are first a practitioner, you try something on your partner, then the partner is trying it on you, and there is an observer who is commenting on it,
Yes.
and then everybody is switching roles. This is the fastest way of learning, because you have access to all the perceptual positions of your brain. First you are doing, so you are experiencing, then you are witnessing, so you can see the mistakes of somebody else that you can therefore not do because you have seen somebody else doing the mistakes, and you can be from the observer who doesn't have any challenge. So there is the observing without the pressure. When you can have those three roles together, learning something, you're speeding up your learning by probably 5 or 10 times, because
Wow.
you're learning, you're escaping, you're evading so many mistakes you would have done otherwise if you didn't have partners to practice with. That's a luxury to have partners to practice with, so it's not always possible. I mean, not in every type of learning. Some of the things I have learned, I didn't have any partners to practice with, but in NLP, therefore, I found that guy who was really, really valuable. So there was not any one really big thing in terms of specific technique we used that worked more than any other, but it was this factor of being able to do something and then having it done on yourself. So you are experiencing it as the subject, which is extremely important, because that way you can figure out if you had a breakthrough yourself when somebody told you this phrase, or when somebody made your mind go that way. Then you know that if you do that yourself on somebody else, it will work, because it worked on you. Therefore, you will have the confidence and the
Yeah.
assertiveness in your eyes, in your language, because it has worked on you. So you will be way more assertive when doing it on someone else, and the client you will have will be, you know, more reassured that, whoa, this guy or this woman knows what he's talking about, just because of this assertiveness. But if it has never been done on yourself, it's kind of difficult to know how to guide some client if you don't know yourself what it feels like to be changed by those techniques. So this was the big takeaway. It was to always switch roles, which is the presupposition of all those exercises. You want to first be the leader, then the subject, and you switch roles. That way you experience what it is and you fortify your learning experience. So yeah, we worked intensely on that for months and months, and learned so many things. We were constantly going back and forth on, oh, I figured that out. And, oh, what do you think that if I do this with this, it works? Or do you think if I do this language pattern, it works? And for the small record, I became known because of my breakdowns of Richard Bandler. If you want the truth, my breakdowns of Richard Bandler started there, started with that guy. I know I had already been breaking down a few videos from Bandler before, but exchanging my discoveries with that guy who was largely as smart as I was about NLP, it was how I fortified my understanding of what Bandler does, because we were going back and forth on thoughts on what Bandler does when he's saying that and this.
Yeah.
And some of the things I included in my videos from the Bandler on the Bandler breakdowns were coming from that guy. Only a few, but you know, it was that level of acquaintance. Like we were really going back and forth on really super interesting things. So yeah, that was the big thing of how I developed my skills, having a partner to practice with.
Yeah,
it was not the only thing, but it is
something I've wondered about you, Matteo, in terms of the fact that so many people have said. I'm just looking over the testimonials of your stuff over the years. People say they oh my gosh, this is so clear. Oh, I've never I'm able to work with people all of a sudden. All my worries with clients are gone. I mean, which is interesting because there is a market for hypnosis. Like, we know the names of, beyond even the creators, Bandler, Grinder, all this stuff. There are people out there. I mean, there is a big, big hypnosis training company out there that is doing, they really claim their corner of the internet. And then there are tons of NLP trainers online, and now everything's virtual. And I find it interesting that. And there are even people that have said, well, this training company makes it too complicated, so I'm decomplicating it. I mean, what do you think? Was there anything in particular that you think led to you being able to break down these techniques and make them more simple for people to do and ultimately more practical? What do you owe to that?
So right there, you're talking about the whole Mind Titans brand, where I broke down all the content.
And even your programs and started teaching people this. I mean, did that take time for you to do? Was this, did you see the simplicity early on, I guess, is what I'm really asking. And if not, how did you get from having all this knowledge to being able to really go and create Mind Titans?
So there was, there could be many, many, there are many things to mention about the transition between just me doing this stuff for fun on my own and becoming a business owner in that space. There are many, many, many steps down the road. It didn't happen overnight, or you don't even have any idea it would end up that way. But to answer clearly to the question, was it right away that I could break it down so with such a simplicity? So I would say I was already breaking I think two things. The first one is, as I said, I was passionate about the mind from a very early age. So probably some things I understand about people communication and how the mind works are coming from a passion that started when I was a teenager. So my understanding of it is not just coming from reading a few books. It's coming from having watched people from the outside.
Yes.
For more than 10 years, you know? This is the first thing. So when I understand, when I when I was studying things about the mind and seeing people like Bandler, well, you got somebody like me. It was more than 10 years that I was interested in that stuff. So it didn't come just out of watching a few videos and attending one practitioner course like most people into NLP. It's just that, reading maybe one or two books and then attending a course, and then that's all they do. For me, it was 10 years of studying, being fascinated, watching TV shows about the documentaries about, yeah, either criminal minds or stuff like that, just to figure out how people work from the inside, what could have made this person become this and that.
You had a lot of different context to build off of.
Yeah, a lot of different context. And in magic too, you are always a hypnotist in magic, because you want to make people think something happens when it really isn't happening.
We
mentioned that already the last time, but the one big part I think of my understanding of what Bandler does is that Bandler is a magician too. He has been referring to magic tricks. Many people wouldn't catch up on this, but people like you and I, he mentioned a few things in his seminars. I know, and you would know too, if you had seen those videos specifically, he can't talk that way with those examples if he was not a magician himself. So I know he is one, and he has been doing card. There is even a picture of him on Google doing the card spread, you know. So he has been a magician. The fact is, when you are a magician from several years in close-up magic, one of the big things is that you have an intuitive understanding of misdirection. Misdirection is, you know, you say something and actually you do something else, but the person in front of you doesn't know you have done something else. And when you have been practicing magic for a while, this misdirection is not just theoretical, because I could, like any magician, I could explain to lay people what misdirection is. I could make an expose for 5 hours, then I would do it. They would still not see it.
Yes.
Because it's not just about understanding it. Yeah, you know what I'm talking about. It's not just about understanding. It's about this intuition of knowing when people are looking at you and not at your hands, or you want them to look here at the same time you're doing this with your left hand. All this is an intuition to get. And when you master this intuition, you understand what Bandler does, because all the covert hypnosis strategies of Bandler are all about misdirection. It's all about, I say this, but actually I'm communicating this to your unconscious mind. The framework of everything he does can be explained, it's not the only way, but can be explained under that frame of misdirection. I want you to think I'm talking about this, whereas in reality, in the back of my mind and in the back of your mind, I'm talking about this blockage you've had for years, etc. So I think this was part of my intuition to understand what Bandler does for real and breaking it down. Then for the whole aspect of explaining it to people, that's something I haven't completely figured out, why people were so much complimenting me about, oh, it is so simple and so clear. I never thought I had any gift for explaining things with clarity. I don't think I ever learned that in any book or anything. So if this is really a skill, probably I was just born with that, I guess. Which I don't like to say that, because it makes people.
Then an NLP person would go, well, how do we break? What do we? Okay, if it's a skill, we can all achieve it. So how do we break down your natural ability to break things down?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Indeed, I had some gift for simplicity, for simplifying things. I maybe it comes from the fact I have a pretty fast metabolism and I hate when things are going slow. So I'm always trying to find the fastest way of doing things.
Yeah.
And when you want to explain something, if you want the fastest way of explaining something, you have to break it down into simple components. If you make it with too much theory or too many steps, a process made of 35 steps, like they do sometimes in psychology, they have all those variables and they are crossing each other. It's like a whole mess. Even the researchers don't understand what they're talking about at some point. Whereas if you want an explanation or teaching something to be fast, when you want people to get results fast, which was my goal from the beginning, I'm like, okay, I'm starting teaching this stuff. I want people to get results like today. I want them to have results today, which never happens, but I want them to have results today. Therefore, I need to reduce to the simplest possible element of what I'm explaining. And I think that's where I was already doing that for myself. Like, yeah. I don't want to wait 5 years to have this or that result. I want it now, which never happens neither, but I want it now, therefore.
Yeah, how quickly are you able to get a change for yourself? Let's say you, and I'm curious about, you know, what your impulse is, so we can attempt to make this more practical for people. I know this has been pretty high level so far, but let's say you're saying, you know, okay, well, I have to, I need to start running. I need to start running out of the blue. I need to start running, having to go to the gym, having to put on my stuff. It's going to be annoying. I don't want to do that. I'd rather sit around and watch TV. Like, if you're kind of dealing with that parts conflict inside of yourself where you don't want to do it, I mean, instinctively, how would you go about making yourself get a fast change so that you could get this practice going?
So actually, I had done several self-modeling on myself to understand how I learn things, because I have also always been kind of gifted with learning things fast.
When I want to know about that too. Yeah.
I had kind of self-modeled my. I have several papers on that that I did. You know, the process of modeling on myself. So I will send that to you. I don't have everything in my head right now, but I would send it to you, no problem. From what I can already say, there was one big thing is to break down and reduce to the smallest things you can do right now. I think it always comes down to chunking down to get to the NLP terminology. And whatever you're learning, it's like, what is the smallest possible actionable chunk you have at your disposal right now? And especially this one, I can definitely say I know this is one of the biggest foundations of my way of learning things fast. It is that most people want to have the whole road mapped out before starting something. My strategy from the beginning of personal development for me, I trained myself on that over the years, so it was not right away, but the biggest foundation is that I don't care what are all the steps, because I know the steps are going to change and my view on the project is going to change down the road. Therefore, I'm never trying to figure out the whole road before starting to learn something or practicing something. I only want to know what is the first and eventually second step. This is the only thing I want to know, because I know from experience that as soon as I have completed the first step, my brain will generate the ideas for the second and third step. But yes. If I don't complete the first step, my brain will not be able to generate what the third step needs to be. Or if I try to generate that from my head in the beginning without having gathered experience from the first step of the process, then I will just generate an idea that is doomed to fail, because I don't have all the elements. I don't have enough feedback to figure out what step number three is. Before I complete step number one, step number two. So that's how I learn things really fast. I never try to figure out how the whole thing is going to work. I only want to figure out what is the first step at my disposal, at my immediate disposal. Not the first step once I will have a coach, or once I will have this, or once I will have money. No, what is the first step right now? Like if you tell me you want to learn running, then I ask you, what is the first easiest thing you can do today or tomorrow? That is the first thing. And then I want you to do it for real. And if the answer is, oh, I can just run for 5 minutes, then you start there. Then you start running for 5 minutes.
Right.
It's better than just waiting for months and months and months to have the perfect trainer or whatever. And from the moment where you have run for 5 minutes, then you apply your own feedback. The kind of feedback I always use is the same. It's 3 points. What did I do right? What did I do right? Did I motivate myself to go running? Okay, that's a good thing. I did that right. Second, what could I have done better? And you can notice the reframe. Instead of asking what is wrong, because it puts blame and shame on you, you ask, what could I have been done better? Therefore, you build momentum in your
Yeah.
head to do it again instead of blaming yourself. Oh, I'm such a failure. I didn't get there. Oh, what could I have been done better? And third point is next time, what is the sole thing I want to focus on? Therefore, you build the momentum to go to the second step of your training. And after the second step, you do the same process. What did I do right? What could have been done better? And what do I want to focus on next time? And from there, with that feedback, you will have the idea in your mind for the third step. You go to the third step, feedback again. And when you do that, okay, there are still ups and downs in motivation, but despite this, you're moving forward. And within 6 months, you have gotten extremely far. Whereas what most people do is they just intellectualize before doing and they never do. What do you think?
Yes. Yes, this is so good. And everybody listening, I mean, really, really soak that in because you were talking about learning, you were talking about running, but really what you were speaking to was the process of achieving any goal that you have. I mean, I think this is the it's the quote unquote manifestation process in a lot of ways. This chunking down. I mean, yeah, I do think there is this I'm curious what your thoughts are on this idea that you could go very. I feel like there are a lot of techniques out there that lean towards going for this end result. And I've never. It's never been. That has never worked for me. I know maybe for some people it does. And I know the trainer John Overdorf, who I've mentioned on this show, and I've even talked about Beyond Goals and his model, which is similar to what you're talking about, which is doing a small step and then reflecting on iterating based on that step because he believes we're non-linear humans. So this idea of having this goal, I mean that, yeah, that's kind of the idea that there are a lot of courses, there are a lot of people out there that would say, okay, and by the end of where do you want to be 6 months from now? Imagine your perfect house, your perfect. And that stuff has never fully resonated with me because it's so far out in the future that it has nothing. I don't even know what it would take to get. It's such a. It feels like it's such a fantasy. Yeah. What is? I mean, when it comes to implanting a future memory, which is a classic technique of NLP and hypnosis. How do you make sure you're doing it in a way that actually gets people to move, as opposed to just living in this grandiose fantasy world?
By really better questioning what the problem is and what has been maintaining the problem so far. I want to be crystal clear with the person on why are they still there? Not just what the problem is, but why is it still happening? Because if I want to give them the best strategy ever for them to move on, I need to really figure out what has been keeping them stuck so far. If I don't understand this clearly, then I may give them a technique that won't help at all. That's why I never say that the whole visualization thing about your future is a bad or a good thing itself. I would say for me personally, it's a really bad thing. So we are all different on that. So there is no
Yeah.
generalization here. For me, it's a really bad thing because with the super heavy, fast metabolism I have and the constant pressure I have for doing things and doing more. If I, on top of that, if I visualize my future, I'm like putting such a level of stress on myself, I don't sleep anymore. So for
Right.
me, visualizing your future for me is a really dumb thing, unless it is for just getting directions. If it is just for getting that, asking my unconscious mind to ask to find the right direction, then it's a good thing to visualize my future. But otherwise, it's just putting stress on myself. So it's not the best advice for me. Now, when I, how to know if it is the best advice for you or anybody I could be working with, I need to figure out first what has been keeping you stuck so far. If what has been keeping you stuck was that you could never project yourself beyond tomorrow, then yes, then visualizing might be a good thing, visualizing your future. But if your problem has been like me, like that you were always doing more and never taking any rest, then no, just stop visualizing, stop doing anything, just drop down, get some sleep aid, whatever, some sleep
Yeah.
help, whatever, but do something else that is breaking the negative pattern you have been finding yourself into so far. So it's more about figuring out what specifically is the problem, And as you know from the NLP world, the problem is never really the first one we think about. When we think about, oh, I have a limiting belief. Maybe no, maybe you just have a bad habit of always complaining, but you interpret that as a limiting belief because you have read about limiting beliefs. It may not even have anything to do with that. So this skill of figuring out specifically what the problem is, and even more important, why is it still there today? This is how you can figure out what is the way to get out of that. Otherwise, you may miss the point.
Yeah. Yeah, I really want you to go back to, or at least talk a little bit about some other kind of practical self-change things that you did early on. I mean, because you said the first 2 years you were spending your time doing that. Was there anything in particular that you ran into? Like, for instance, did you discover that I don't fit in was a limiting belief? And how did you overcome that? I mean, what do you think was one of the more prominent things that you said, whoa, I can, let me do a swish pattern on myself and then boom, now I feel different. I mean, do you recall anything?
Well, as far as self-help techniques, I don't know. Definitely the thing from Tony Robbins' book. Well, he didn't invent that, but I learned it from Tony Robbins' book. The figuring out whenever you have something you don't like about yourself, or even in general, pay attention to the submodalities going on in your mind. So whenever you are in an emotional state or in some situation you don't like, figure out in your brain what has been the sequence. Was it a voice in your head that has triggered a negative feeling? Was it an image in your head that triggered this or that? This was a huge breakthrough back in my first year of college, before, you know, the first exams after the first semester. So it was like 4 months, 6 months down the road in college, and I was super worried to not pass my exams. And I was reading again that chapter from Tony Robbins on submodalities, and I realized, well, I'm only making images of myself failing at the exam. You know, it was after having passed, after having completed all the days, and then we were waiting for the teachers to correct and give back on our grades. And during that duration of waiting, I was so stressed and so worried, and that's where I remembered or read again the submodality stuff. I realized, well, all this worry is not based on real life. It's not based on real life evidence. It's only based on the images I make of myself failing. That's the only thing. So I think I didn't do a switch pattern, but maybe, oh no, I did, you know, the reduction of the image, put it in black and white, distance yourself from the image, the very basic NLP stuff. I did that. It worked.
It's powerful. It's very powerful, that stuff.
Indeed. It vanished all the worries. And in the end, I passed my exams. So I had the grades going to next year. So it was already done at this point, but you know, it removed all the worry. So it was a huge breakthrough. The submodality stuff is also, I think, definitely the thing I use the most in coaching and therapy. Maybe not these days anymore, but for a very long while, it was the very top thing I was using, submodalities, because it had been so powerful on myself that I thought, okay, I need to use that with everybody else because it is so mind-blowing that you just change an image or a voice and it shifts your whole experience and your whole even identity sometimes. So that was a big breakthrough, but this is only for the mental part. Otherwise, if I had to give, you know, the top 0.1% thing that really made me change, and that is the kind, I'm always half-hearted about giving that kind of stories or things, because if I really mentioned the kind of shit I did on that, most people would say, oh, it's he was just courageous anyway, I would never do that. But it was about challenging myself in awkward situations. Pushing myself into really awkward situations. If I give you all of them, you would barely even think that I did this, but I have videos that prove it. I will send that to you privately.
Why is everything on video? That's interesting. Everything in your life has been documented on video. That is a whole other.
I know. But, well, only the best things have been documented. It was the idea of putting myself into really awkward situations, And once it was done, you know, there was like nothing that could scare me or make me doubt myself, because I was like, okay, if I have already done that, what else could happen? You know, what else can happen
Yeah.
in terms of feeling dumb, feeling stupid, which is one of the biggest rebuttal of people when they want to do something new. It's like, oh, but what if I look like a stupid? What if I look stupid? Or what if people laugh at me? Or what if people don't like me? When you have done the kind of shit I've done, like one good ex not even the worst one, but one good example was walking in the streets for 2 hours with a dress and a dildo on my head, talking to people
Right.
as if not, talking to the challenge was to talk to people as if it was completely normal. I had to act as if it was completely not, I was not allowed to say that it is a challenge. I had to act
Right.
completely normal. When you have done something like this, what else can happen, you know? In terms of looking awkward, not succeeding at something, whoa, boo! I didn't succeed, boo! What do I have to lose more than this? You know,
That
like,
is, yeah.
oh yeah. So, and this is even far from being the worst ones the worst one I did. But those kind of things, I used to push myself into those kind of situations very often because I wanted to, you know, also to prove to myself that I'm not scared. Which comes when you're really young from insecurities of maybe am I enough, you know, all those things. But I have done so much of that at this point, for somebody to really, oh well. Also, there is all the fighting sports I've done before. But with all of that, for a challenge to make me doubt myself, it would be extremely hard for me to doubt myself at this point because I have done so many very uncomfortable things that it always pushed beyond the boundaries. And combining that with with hypnosis, you know, having done something really challenging and then doing hypnosis to fortify your changes, this is, I think, the biggest component of my evolution and of how fast I succeed in life, because I always put myself into something awkward or uncomfortable, and then I reinforced or removed the blockages I found out if I did something uncomfortable and I realized I was super stuck, or I was super scared, or I was clueless about what to do, or I kept having those bad images coming up. Okay, I know there is something bad going on in my head. Then I can use all the NLP stuff, either some modalities or
Yeah.
hypnosis, whatever. So combining those two is the most effective strategy for me, my opinion, for everybody. And it has to incorporate both physical actions and something mental. When you do only one of them, to me, there is something missing most of the time. You need something physical in the real world to create a change and then to reinforce or initiate the other change with the mental stuff. Both
Yeah.
of them go together. But too many people in that space, and especially in spiritual stuff, they just do the mental side, the
That's what I was
healing
gonna
and stuff,
say.
but then they
Yeah.
never take action.
Yeah. No, I mean, look, I was gonna ask, does everybody need to wear a dildo on their head to learn NLP, you think? Or is there, because you do teach these courses. I mean, you've got so many different things in here. And, you know, sometimes they say, well, I mean, that's one of the claims that a trainer will make. They go, I went through all the work so you didn't have to. I do believe there's truth to that, but there, yeah, but you know, you're teaching people. I mean, you used to teach people sleight of mouth, which, I mean, you could spend the whole year, maybe or two, na nailing those patterns. Ericksonian hypnosis, the meta model, all the covert storytelling. I mean, these are things that can take a long while in traditional ways, to really melt in and learn. But do you feel that in your work? Certainly the reviews are positive. What does it really take to master these things, in a way that everybody might want to do?
Extremely easy to answer that for that one. Also, because you have made me think about learning for the past half hour, so I can nail
Okay.
it. Now my brain has made the answer come out. It always comes down to only one thing, and I was thinking about this today also because something else is bugging me right now, and I'm pushing through it, and now I'm getting out of it. And it's the same process all the time. It is when you want to learn something fast and master something fast, whether it is NLP or anything else, You start, you evaluate what is the thing that scares you the most, and you start there. Because the thing that scares, well, unless it is something that can put you into physical danger, then it's another story. But as long as it is nothing that can put your life on, life, or it's not a life or death matter, as long as it is not this, evaluate what is the thing you are the most scared of, and you start there. And it's a habit to build. As I said, I have built that habit from very long ago and done tons of shit, so now I'm used to it. But for people who are not used to it, it might be, I know it's difficult for many people, and they never, a lot of people unfortunately never really push through that. But when you go toward the thing you're the most scared of and you start there, then you are on the best path to changing yourself, because all the biggest changes in your life are the scariest ones all the time. I mean, the changes from which the actions that will make you change the fastest. So there are slow ways of changing, which I hate. I want things to go fast. A matter of personality too. I'm not judging that people who change slowly. It's just a matter of personality, that what you want. But if you want to change fast, you need to go toward fear, because anything that can make your life evolve fast will be scary, because it will reevaluate, make your brain reevaluate all the things you thought were true and all the assumptions you had about yourself and about life. This is extremely scary, because from an evolutionary setting, we don't like change because change is dangerous. I'm not going to do the whole evolutionary psychology thing, but everybody has an intuitive understanding of that, I guess. We're not, we don't, we are scared of change anyway. So whenever you want to master something that you don't master yet, and that can help you change your life, which is the case of NLP, you can really change your life and the life of others with this, you're going to be scared at one point or another. For most people, it is when they get their first client. It is deadly scary. They're like, what am I going to say? Is it right to charge right away? All those questions come in. This is a scary thing to do. Yes, it is. Is it the fastest way to learn and to master it? Yes, it is. So it's to me, it's more a habit to build of always going toward things that scare you. And the more you do it, the easier it is. So personally, I have done so many scary things that at this point, unless my life is in immediate danger, which I don't think happens that many times these days, not anymore. Unless my life is really at play, unless my life is at play, there is nothing that can really scare me to the point of not taking action because of all the things I have done before. I'm not a soldier, so I'm not used to go toward death. Not at that point. But before that stage, the stage before death, where it's just scared of something big, I have done so much of this that no, there is nothing that can really shake me off, because I have pushed through too many fears at this point to still be scared of changing something big in my life. Whenever you want to master something fast, go toward the thing you're the most scared of and start there.
Wow,
And
great.
sorry.
Oh no, keep
And
going, keep going. This is already amazing.
if it is really too overwhelming, because I know many people listening to that stuff will don't have the kind of confidence I have today, and will be like, oh, this is not for me, it's impossible for me. If it is too big for you, as I said earlier, break it down. Break it down into the smallest, easiest thing you can do right now. If that big fear you have is too overwhelming right now, what is a smaller component of that fear you can act upon today or tomorrow? And that way you build up on it. Now I'm
Yeah. No, that's really good. That's really great advice. Matteo Morelli, part one. Thanks so much for coming on the show. You know, I titled this episode in reference to ChatGPT. It's an exciting world out there in AI. If you haven't checked it out yet, I highly recommend it. And for a far less exciting world of artificial intelligence, I highly recommend HBO's Westworld. Part two comes out next week. We're talking fame, fortune, power, influence, covert hypnosis, how to use it to affect others. Thank you, Rodney McGilvery, for the theme music. Thank you, Zero Boy, for the pre-theme music. I want to hear your voice. If you like the show, let me know it. I want to hear your weirdo voice every day, all day, all night. Hey, that's weird when the music runs out. Someone bring it back. Whatever. You still listening? Much love.